Welcome, everybody. If you have arrived at this juncture, at this intersection, you have once again arrived at Jubilee Street, a music podcast. I am your host, Jake Curtis. The person you hear chanting in the background is our other co-host, Ian Mac Curtis.
Big Mac.
He is here to tell us what we're going to talk about this week. Ian, why don't you tell him what we're going to talk about?
Today we're going to talk about The Good Son from the album The Good Son by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
There was a podcast named Jubilee Street, a music podcast hosted by Jake and so this section of the audio is heavily edited because I could not stop laughing at thinking about Ian telling me that this was the titular song from the Good Son album.
What do you mean this section's heavily edited?
Because I was laughing so much beforehand because you kept saying titular.
I was just saying titmouse.
But you were calling the song titular.
It's a titmouse.
And then anytime you said tit, like, I'm holding back the laughter very well right now. I've got my DJ face on, you know, radio MC, like, I got to be serious. I'm in the game. But tits are funny. You know, the word tit is hilarious. Ian, let's get right into it. Why'd you pick The Good Son?
Because you told me to pick a song from The Good Son.
It's that simple here at Jubilee Street. I send Ian an album. He picks the song. I chose The Good Son. I feel like it's kind of a summery album. Makes me think of Nick Cave. He's got his shirt open, hanging out on the beach, chain smoking, writing in his little yellow notebook. It's yellow because it's been stained from all the cigarette smoke and the coffee stains. Maybe a little bit of residual heroin. I don't know.
You think this is a summer album? Know.
Absolutely.
Huh.
You don't, you're not sitting on the beach and you're like, one more man gone. One more man gone, one more man.
I don't think so.
That's the jam. I love this album. Every song is a hitter. Like, this one goes into, what is it, Sorrow's Child or whatever, mm-hmm. Sorrowful Child. I don't know. I'm not an expert. Then it goes into the Weeping Song and the Shipping Song.
The Ship
yeah,
Song.
Yeah, sure, I'm crying a little bit while I'm listening to this record. It's a beautiful album, but there's just something kind of, like, triumphant about this.
Is it a bit that you call the Shipping Song?
What song?
The Ship Song.
It's a bit, yeah.
It would make, because UPS or FedEx should buy it and make it the Shipping Song.
Yeah, we can do the song along with Pusha T and brother.
Yeah, Pusha T, he could get it in the right hands, and then UPS could pay.
You got so excited.
Could pay us millions of dollars.
Capayas would be a good name for a rapper. Capayas.
Capayas. Topanga.
Capayas. Just because it sounds like could pay us or you pay us, something like that.
Pusha T announced like a massive tour. He's coming to Indianapolis.
You going to go see him?
At a venue I just went to over the weekend that I'll talk about later.
Ian's Live Music Corner coming at the end of the episode.
How'd it feel to get back into a good Nick Cave song?
As compared to what?
What was the last one we did? Blind Lemon Jefferson.
Oh, I mean, definitely not one of the best Nick Cave songs in comparison to this, but it felt awesome. This is probably one of my favorite Nick Cave albums. There's so many hits on it, like I said earlier. I'm going to start to repeat myself. We've only been recording for 5 minutes. It felt good. Like I said, this album just feels like I'm putting on a warm coat and I'm sitting on the beach.
So the first...
What about you?
Oh, it felt great. So the beginning of the song opens up with a kind of like a, what would you call it? Like a gospel kind of chant vibe.
It sounds a lot like a Chain Gang kind of song.
Yeah, that kind of vibe, which was taken from, so it's taken from a song that has been covered by a lot of people, Another Man Done Gone. I'm assuming Nick Cave was probably paying an homage to the Johnny Cash version. I'm going to play kind of one of the original ones. I don't know if this is the very original version of the song, but I think this is sort of thought of as the oldest, like, what's the word? Like, tentpole recording of it by Odetta, just so people can hear it if they haven't heard it. So yeah, you can hear the resemblance. The Johnny Cash version's him and June Carter Cash going back and forth. It's really cool. Just kind of one of those American songs that have been done by a bunch of people. So this is, like the Blind Lemon Jefferson episode, another instance of Nick Cave showing his love for just classic American blues and the American songbook.
He's got a knack for throwing in those little Easter eggs and homages in all his songs. Some of them are better than others. In this case, this one's done very well, very tastefully. And there's a transition nearer to, like, I guess, like the three-quarter mark of the song where they come back into that intro, which is really, really well done. One thing I wanted to ask you was, I don't really, like, I've never really dove into the subject material that, or the subject matter that inspired this record. Can you enlighten me and the listeners a little bit about what this album's talking about or what its, like, messaging is?
I guess I don't really know about the whole album. I don't, if the album has a whole, like, a theme as a whole, I don't know what it is, but this song is definitely like a Cain and Abel sort of vibe, them being the two sons of Adam and Eve. I always get mixed up which one's which. So Abel is the shepherd, I think, and Cain is the farmer. Is that right? And
I actually have it pulled up. Let me get it for you.
Basically, God asks them both to make a sacrifice to him, because God in the Old Testament is always asking ridiculous shit of everyone. And they both give their sacrifice to God. God likes Abel's sacrifice, doesn't like Cain's. Cain gets jealous, kills Abel. You know, it's your...
Yep.
Your first...
You got it right.
Your first tale of murder, first tale of betrayal. And, I mean, of course, this would be a subject matter that's right up Nick Cave's alley. This is probably the most explicit time he's used Cain and Abel, but I'm sure it is something that's in his mind probably all the time with how much he has a predilection towards these Old Testament stories.
Nick Cave's so biblical, call him Nick Cain.
Nick Cain and Clark Abel.
Nick Cain and Clark Abel seeds.
But yeah, it's really
That's been Jubilee Street, everybody. Go ahead.
I was thinking about today, the Adam and Eve thing. So they have Cain and Abel, and the Bible doesn't really address where women come from after that. Like, some people believe that Cain and Abel both had twins, and that they, twins that were the other sex, and then they just had more kids with their twins, which is just weird to think about.
The biblical times where we could sleep with our family members.
Well, I mean, if there was only, you know, the only humans in the entire world to choose from are your mother or your sister, like, how else is humanity
going to start
keep going?
Somewhere, right?
I guess so. But the Bible, I think, kind of glosses over that.
Because the Bible tells me so.
Cain kills Abel, bedroom. And then I guess the end of that story is cast out and kind of just becomes a wanderer, and he's kind of the patron saint for any vagrants or vagabonds or wanderers, kind of sons of Cain.
Well, most of our, like, biblical fairy tales and what do they call them when they're lessons?
It's parables.
Proverbs. Parables. Thank you. Parables. Usually they're just like, here's two people who followed the will of God. One person who had a harder life, got revenge, and then ended up not getting into the kingdom of heaven.
The Old Testament is pretty much, you know, I think the New Testament is a lot of, like, pretty solid life lessons for the most part. And that's mm-hmm. a lot of the vibes that I think Nick Cave deals with now is more of a New Testament feeling. Old Testament is old Nick Cave, and I feel like the only lesson is that if someone in power tells you to do something, just do it and don't question it. God is just always telling people to do ridiculous shit that doesn't make any sense, and if you don't do it, he'll kill you.
With very little real payoff.
No payoff at all. It's just like, do this because I told you to. Like, he tells Isaac to kill his firstborn son, and if you don't do it, I'll probably just kill you or something. No reason why. Yeah, I just want to see if you'll do it.
And then if you were to look at Isaac, like if it were a real story, Isaac would probably get put in jail.
I think it's Abraham. Isaac is the son, I believe.
Okay.
I used to be way more well-versed on my Bible stuff.
Well, this is the Paramount Pictures, Mel Gibson reboot, Isaac and Abraham, where it's the tables have been turned. And now Isaac, the baby, kills his dad.
God's saying, kill your dad.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's like a creepy baby movie, going to be streaming on HBO Max summer 2023.
But yeah, all these sort of like things that on the surface seem like morality plays, but are really just nothing good is ever going to happen. I mean, you can see why Nick Cave is drawn, and early Nick Cave is drawn to that sort of thing. It's just dark and fucked up.
Yeah. Question, is this story at all tied? Is it the same thing as the prodigal son story?
I don't know. So is the prodigal son a thing from the Bible? I don't know.
Well, I got a link that took me to Luke 15, verses 11 to 32. So that wouldn't apply here.
Luke is Jesus. That's you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
I don't know what that means. Not a bibliophile.
I mean, either. It's just, I feel like it's just, it's hard to grow up in America and not be inundated with the Bible. So the first four books of the New Testament
being judged by my co-host Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and
they're the Gospels of Jesus.
So Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. That's the way it starts out. It's the parable of the lost son. And then not long after, the younger son got all together. He got everything together that he had, set off for a distant country, and squandered his wealth in wild living. I just feel like this is very similar to like the groundwork for a lot of like hero's journey kind of things. Like Siddhartha has a similar experience. Like,
oh, it might be related to the song, but it's not related to Cain and Abel. I mean, Jesus was
no.
Roman times. It was thousands of years. Depending on what timeline you believe, it was thousands of years after Adam and Eve.
I guess I'm trying to get to the bottom of why he named this album and then the song of the same name, The Good Son. Like, is he making a judgment call? Does Nick have, like, I'd love to hear his perspective on, like, what if he's making some kind of, like, you know, this is who the good son is. I don't know if maybe that's like reading into it too much.
So if you think about Cain and Abel and try to like put yourselves in those shoes, one child is told to be a farmer and is told to work the land and get their hands dirty. The other one is a shepherd, and they're caring for animals and they're nurturing, and that's the one that God favors, even though both of them just kind of did what they were told. And I think part of why that story resonates is because I think anyone who has a sibling, you know, like I was the oldest sibling, and I, for the most part, stayed out of trouble, got good grades. I was probably a pretty easy child to parent. And sometimes I felt like I would get compared to my younger siblings. Like, why can't you be like him? Putting me in this position where I'm like the good son and all this guilt. Like, I wasn't trying to like make my younger siblings look bad, or like, I didn't want them to be measured against me. Mm-hmm. I feel like calling it the good son is kind of like ironic. Like, it also kind of sucks for Abel too, who was just doing his thing, and God said you're better than your brother, and then your brother kills you.
Yeah, imagine being the one who sits around and drinks milk and honey all the time. You get accepted by God, and then your brother kills you, and then God's like, well, you know,
like if you know, Jeff got in trouble all the time, and then your parents are like, why can't you be like Jake? Like, that's also gonna make you feel bad, because you're like, I didn't ask for this.
Well, that was pretty much our upbringing, I think.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I feel like any a lot of times it's the younger sibling that the other ones are measured against. And it's not fair for the quote-unquote good son either, because they're just doing their thing. The lesson of the Bible is nothing's fair for anyone.
Yeah, the lesson of the Bible is do what I say or you will suffer, which is a really, like, it's depressing that that's been what most people, like, learn about from a very young age as far as, like, how to determine the meaning of life.
Yeah, I mean, these stories, I mean, my parents weren't that religious, and I was still bombarded with Bible stories just through, like, pop culture and stuff, and, like, some weird shit to put into kids' heads.
Very fucked up. Very fucked up. I'm, like, resisting the urge to reference that Family Guy episode where Peter's dad visits and he's, like, super Catholic.
Well, he just did.
So look that up if you want to know what I'm talking about. So we've talked about this before on the podcast, but Nick has mentioned that this album in particular was inspired a lot by his partner, girlfriend at the time, Brazilian journalist Vivian Carneiro. Do you think any of his journey with, like, drug addiction and, like, relationships come through on this song?
Maybe, but not that I thought. I feel like you're more prone to read into that stuff than me. I don't really ever think about that stuff. I'm sure it's all there.
Well, it's interesting that he's chosen to illuminate Cain killing his brother with a gospel verse in the beginning, so it does remain very biblical thematically. But the one more man gone being repeated in the beginning and then returned to ultimately means that, like, the, like, sort of absurdity of death can still be celebrated even though it was unfair. And I think that in the sort of amazing way that Nick can kind of rejuvenate these, like, old violent tales, he can still find a way to, like, make faith make sense. And to me, his fascination with all these, like, biblical references and God, I think, are not, like, there's nothing new about that. That's the basis of being a writer, is, like, thinking about existence and your experience within it. And there's definitely, like, to me, like, there's this sort of, like, celebratory quality in this song, even though it also has a lot of, like, I hate to say this, but I feel like a lot of this earlier Nick Cave material has so much, like, fire and brimstone energy, you know? It's, like, big dick energy, but in this case, it's fire and brimstone energy, FBE.
Well, I mean, it's celebrating, like, the grayness of life, of morality, like...
Yeah.
Cain is kind of the good son, like... He just did what he was supposed to do, and God spited him for it. And then, fuck yeah, he got mad and he killed his brother. Maybe he shouldn't have killed his brother. I'm not saying people should kill their siblings, but, like, you gotta have sympathy for that guy, too.
Well, it reminds me of when I don't know if you did this. I don't remember his name, but he was our psychology professor at Mail.
Mr. N... And start with an N. I don't remember.
He loved Dale Gribble. That's all I remember about him.
Oh, really? I don't remember that.
He loved Dale Gribble. Every, like, PowerPoint slide, he would have, like, a Dale Gribble joke in there somewhere. He loved it. But we went to the state penitentiary, and we got to, like, meet people who were in prison for life, which I think is kind of a fucked up trip to do.
Oh,
but
I don't think so. I think that trip was very important for me.
But I mean fucked up in the sense that, like, it's heavy. It's heavy stuff, you know? And I think, like, that age is, like, the perfect time to do it.
I feel like he was a good teacher, and the trip was built around the idea of having empathy for these people.
Yeah.
There's another version of that field trip where it's like, don't do bad stuff or this is how you'll end up. And that's fucked up. But, like, I think all kids should have to, like, at some point in their school career, like, go to a prison and see what that's like and see how easily that could be your life, not even for just reasons.
And that's sort of the gray moral area, is, like, these guys who talk to us, a lot of them deeply, deeply regretted what they'd done. And, you know, given how fucked up the prison system is, they were able to find a little bit of meaning in their journey to, like, a lot of them had life sentences, and that, like, their existence was going to be prison until they died. Mm-hmm. And then part of that time, they would get to talk to these students who had no idea what it was like to be where they were and be like, you know, be careful. You don't want to do this. This is what it's like. This is reality, you know? And
yeah, I don't remember it being like, I mean, I'm sure we heard from different people. Like, you and me might have both heard from different people. I don't remember if everyone was in the same group or not. But, like, I don't even feel like I remember the people being that, like, feeling that much remorse for what they did. More of just, like, this is what it's like if you're in prison. It really sucks. And, like, this could be your life if you, for 5 minutes, make the wrong decision. Or someone thinks you made the wrong decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I definitely got the impression that there was some remorse for sure, but could have been like they have different people speak each day. I don't know.
I wish I remembered it better. I feel like one of the people I remember hearing like was adamant that they were innocent, and that was what hit me. I was like, fuck, like you could live your whole life in this place innocent, or at least believing you're innocent.
That's another terrifying thing too, because there have been people who are put on death row who didn't actually do it, and it's like revealed after they get executed, oh, this guy didn't actually do this. Or,
oh, I mean, all throughout executed. History, from the Bible times to the Salem witch trials till now.
Mm-hmm. And another way I sort of read into this is, you know, having read the NoFX biography recently, their drummer dealt a lot with heroin addiction. And it made me think a lot about his experience with, like, how whenever you really need a fix and you're out of money and you need to get your next, like, high, how, like, it genuinely seemed like your ability to, like, function and reason normally just ended because all you cared about was getting high. So you would, like, steal from your parents or, like, kind of commit these like petty, heinous crimes just to get drugs, you know? And it's difficult to understand as somebody who's never really been addicted to, had any sort of substance abuse problems or addicted to any substances. And that's another thing I thought about is like you, as an addict, you watch people go like, and you're telling yourself like, I'm lucky I'm not this person today, but I could be tomorrow. And that's another thing this song made me think about is like, you know, you may be the next son of God going up to heaven because you made this decision to get high. And it does make, you know, he wasn't quite clean yet. So I do sometimes probably trying a little bit too hard, but read into like how his addiction was formulating these songs and that he was in love too, you know, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I can't firsthand relate to an addict, but what I think about, what I like about this idea of like sympathy for Cain is imagine Jake, like you don't work from home and you're running late for work, you're like, you overslept and you're like 45 minutes late and you're just like rushing to get out of the house to get to work, and you know, you might be rude to people you wouldn't normally be rude to, like if someone tried to stop you, like you just got somewhere to be, you know.
Yeah.
Imagine on top of that, if you only got 3 hours of sleep and then your car breaks down and you have money problems. Like, imagine mentally where you would be, how you would treat people. That's not yourself, but all these factors compounded, you would probably be a pretty shitty person that day.
Definitely.
A lot of people, like, we're in the privilege that's in our life. A lot of people, that's their entire life. So, like, you know, you put yourself in Cain's perspective. God literally spited you, like, the creator of everything. Like, of course you would do some fucked up shit. Like, just imagine how easily, like, things can go wrong and you could be that person.
Well, it also just makes you wonder, like, this is what happens when you take, when you take God into your own hands. And, like, Cain was like, no, fuck this. This is fucked up. Like, I work hard every day and you're punishing me for one mistake. You're not going to like let me into the kingdom of heaven because I didn't offer you this like fuck that, you know?
I don't think he made a mistake. It was just,
yeah,
he picked Abel's offering over it, Cain's.
Well, I was kind of going with your interpretation about, like, oversleeping, you know?
No, yeah. Yeah, I just mean, like, we're lucky that our life is orchestrated around, like, for the most part, being in a fairly good mental state. Like,
certainly.
We generally are able to sleep. We generally have enough money for what we need.
Mm-hmm.
We're not hungry all the time. Like, mm-hmm. But imagine if you were homeless and every single thing you needed to live was, like, a thing that stretched you out and, like, you didn't know where it was going to come from. Like, you would be such mm-hmm. a different person. You would do things you don't think you would do.
Or the fact that, like, you can never find a bathroom to use, depending on where you are.
That's what I mean, yeah.
And you can get arrested for peeing or pooping outside if you don't use the bathroom. It's fucked up.
And then imagine a cop comes to arrest you for doing that. Like, you might punch them, even though you might think, I would never punch a cop. Like, if you were in that situation, who knows what your mental state would be like.
You might just punch the cop, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I probably would.
I get you. Yeah, shout out Kane. He's our MVP.
Also the name of my sister's dog. Also the name of a wrestler.
Shout out Kane, your sister's dog. I'm more of a Dobby fan, though.
Don't shout out the wrestler. He's a right-wing asshole.
Wing asshole. That's our new podcast from Jubilee Street Studios, Right-Wing Asshole, featuring Jake and Ian talking about right-wing problems. Pride. Why did they get their own month? Something like that.
Why is the media trying to turn me gay? Turn me into a member of the Rainbow Army.
I don't know about you, but I remember a time where Disney meant straight. Okay?
I remember a time where I could watch my Viagra commercials in peace without two men kissing all over them.
What happened to me, to Tim Allen Buzz Lightyear, the straight Buzz Lightyear?
Amen.
Huh? What happened to good old-fashioned American Buzz Lightyear? Huh? Whoa. Ian, that clip that just played from our new right-wing asshole podcast, I'm floored. The audio quality is incredible.
It sounds good.
Like we just did it right now.
I stand by that podcast way more than Jubilee Street. It's the thing I'm the most proud of in my life.
Stand by me, the new Jubilee Street podcast, where we exclusively talk about stanning things.
I thought you meant the new podcast where we stan episodes of Jubilee Street. It's the podcast where we break down our podcast.
We break down our podcast. That'd be hilarious. And then we have, like, the after show podcast hosted by Corey Lucas.
So the Weeping Song episode, I really think we didn't hit. I don't know.
That's all right. We kind of hit our improv wall there, so to speak. Slide whistle. Speaking of which, we both need to get slide whistles to use while we're recording. I think it would up the ante for the podcast.
Okay, I'll get one. Sure.
And then,
I'll yes
what
and
do you think
idea.
About putting...
I'll yes and what you said. Yes and I'll what get if, one.
Yes and what if we play, like, trap hip-hop beats behind us talking for the entire episode? What do you think about that?
Yes, and I will work on getting those beats downloaded soon.
Okay, all right. And what if we get Gary Busey to co-host?
Yes, and I will email his agent to see what his rate is.
Okay, great. Ian, the good son, anything else you want to add? I feel like...
Yeah, I didn't think we were going to hit the religious stuff so hard, but I'm glad we did. I wanted to talk about the songwriting, because I feel like Nick Cave's sort of... what's the word I'm looking for? I feel like what he usually does is a lot of times he'll keep the same chord progression the entire song, and if he doesn't, he's not someone to really like hit you with a chorus out of nowhere or like a key change. Even this, you know, his songs usually have verse chorus structure, but they all like feel like it's in the same world. Their songs are very cohesive. This song like moves a lot more than almost any Nick Cave song. The One More Man Gone is nothing like the verse. You know, the One More Man Gone is kind of like, feels like celebratory, like we're all chanting together, even though it's a dark thing to say.
But then, yeah, I said that earlier.
When the verse comes in with that bass, it's like classic old Nick Cave, like very dark. It just plays with the dichotomy that Nick Cave usually doesn't do. usually keeps one mood in a song.
I know this isn't a new idea or anything, but I was definitely thinking a lot while I was listening to this. I'm like, man, I haven't listened to Tom Waits in a while.
I have the same... Okay, well, it must be in the song, because I thought the same thing. I think this is, like, the most Tom Waits Nick Cave song.
Well, one of my favorite Tom Waits songs is Gun Street Girl, and I think this song reminds me a lot of that, because it's got that same kind of groove to it, in the same way like Gun Street Girl is like, dan 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 hair, hair was hair, you know?
Yeah.
That's the best Tom Waits I can do.
Oh, I mean, I'm not even going to try. Like, I can't think of a harder person to impersonate than Tom Waits.
Yeah, you kind of got to stop while you're ahead, because your Paul McCartney is the tops.
I couldn't even try, and if I did, I feel like I would not be able to talk for a week afterwards. I wish I could sing like Tom Waits. It'd be so cool.
You could be the guy from What's He Doing in There?
What's He Doing in There? I heard, like, I don't, you know, you don't know what Tom Waits, I guess same as Nick Cave, like how much is urban myth and how much is real. But I heard that, like, when he was in, like, his late 20s, early 30s, he would just chain smoke and hold a pillow up to his face and scream into it, like, all night, every night, because he was trying to, like, ruin his voice.
Hmm.
And he'd do that for, like, months or years, I don't know, and just permanently has the voice he has now.
Yeah, that's why he's, like, impossible to hear when he's in Licorice Pizza. Like, it doesn't sound like he's saying anything.
Sounds like an urban myth, but, like, when he acts in movies, like, even then, like, it's hard to understand him sometimes. That dude's voice is ragged. But I love it. Shout out Tom Waits.
Put Tom Waits in the mercy seat, huh? Have him cover that.
He would be a dream guest of mine, because I'm sure he's got to know some Nick Cave songs. Imagine getting to talk to Tom Waits for an hour about a Nick Cave song.
What would your top three questions be for Tom Waits?
Are we talking about
for a Tom Waits episode?
Are we talking about Nick Cave with Tom Waits, or are we talking about anything with Tom Waits?
Well, let's keep it on brand, so anything with Nick Cave.
I guess I'd want to know, I'm sure they've met. I would want to know his favorite story of them two together. I would want to know where he first heard Nick Cave, and I would want to know his honest opinion. I feel like Tom Waits is a straight shooter. He doesn't do interviews often, but he's a straight shooter when he does. Mm-hmm. I would want to know his honest thoughts about him.
We should, that's another good idea for a podcast, is straight shooting with Ian.
I'm not.
It's another kind of like, it's not like right wing, but it could be like a right wing show, but it's just you kind of talking about like getting more comfortable being a straight shooter because you don't feel like one.
Yeah, there's certain things I'll be a straight shooter on, but there's some things where I'm like, that person might hear this someday. I got to be careful.
Yeah, like that's kind of, that would be the whole crux of the podcast is like, you know, I'm a straight, you start straight shooting about something and then you start second guessing yourself later on in the episode.
And then
but you forget to edit it.
I edit large portions out, and it's just like a bleeping noise.
I don't know why I got all these podcast ideas today. Anything else about the songwriting you want to touch on?
Leo is in retrograde, and creativity moon is waxing while the stagnation moon is waning.
And stagnation moon's getting a bikini wax.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on the songwriting you want to touch on?
No, I just think it's lovely. I wish Nick Cave would have done this more often in his career, this, like, having different parts of the song feel different. But maybe he wouldn't be Nick Cave if he did. His thing is just, like, I'm going to set a mood, and you're going to live in that mood for 5 minutes.
Is this song on your top three songs from this record?
Tell me if it's on yours while I look up the track listing.
I'm also going to look up the track listing.
Oh, you didn't have an answer. Well, now we have to fill time. Let's see.
Okay, you can edit in the editing.
I'm not. No, I don't edit shit. Let's see. I think. So I know it's not number one because it's not the ship song. I think it is. No, I think it's like number five.
So for me right now, the Weeping song, Sorrow's Child, Juana Cruz, and The Good Son right after that. So it's not top three, top four.
But But like you said earlier, this is a really great album.
It's really great. And I think we've covered a good amount of songs from this.
I might go as to say this is the first great Bad Seeds record.
Wow, that's quite the bombshell to drop near the end of the episode.
What can I say?
Ian, I feel good about The Good Son. That's one more podcast gone. Anything else you want to add before we say goodbye to the listeners?
Let's see. Did Blue, the intern dog, have any notes?
She did.
Fact-checking.
We got a report from Blue the Intern Dog here that you are going to talk about some live music you went to see.
Oh, yeah. Last weekend, I went to Indianapolis, home of Kurt Vonnegut, and...
Japanese breakfast.
Well, I saw that. The Vonnegut Festival is in Bloomington. It's very confusing. And saw Jeff Rosenstock and Namdi again, who I saw open for Japanese breakfast a couple weeks ago. Isn't that crazy? Small world.
They're everywhere.
He jumped on the Jeff Rosenstock tour, I guess. And
what label is Jeff Rosenstock on? Do you know?
I think he's on Sub Pop now. Or I think he's been on Sub Pop for a while.
Is Namdi on Sub Pop?
I don't think so.
They've got to be friends with somebody who's like their label mates with. That's way too... is Namdi local to Indianapolis or Indiana?
He's from Chicago.
Then, yeah, he's just probably getting booked on everything because he's blowing up right now.
I think he got booked on the Kurt Vonnegut Festival out of, a local Midwest guy. But he's on the whole Jeff Rosenstock tour. But I would think they probably go back, Jeff Rosenstock and Namdi.
What you said?
So Jeff Rosenstock, it was at a place called the Deluxe National Center, I think. It's a cool venue. It's like a giant... They probably have stuff like this in San Diego, but not a lot in the Midwest. It's like a giant building, and there's multiple venues. So there's like an upstairs venue and a huge one on the ground floor, and then this one was in the basement. It was like a smaller one. And I will be a straight shooter here, Jake. It was fun concert. It was the first
straight shooting.
It was the first time since COVID. I didn't get in the pit, but I was like right on the pit. It was the first time I'd been like not only packed in with people, but people are like really bumping into me and like, you know,
pit adjacent.
Yeah. I was just like, I'm 30 years old and the pit's full of like, you know, people look like they're like 18 to 20. I just feel weird about jumping in the, I don't know. It's weird being older now. But I did have this thought that, you know, I've seen Jeff Rosenstock for the past 12, 13 years. And
I remember watching him briefly at Skull Alley with Laura Stevenson.
And he's great, but I feel like, I think we looked it up, he's like 40. I feel like he hasn't really changed his onstage persona or like what the show is. And I would love it if he found a way to like keep the same Jeff Rosenstock, like Fugazi, you know, punk to a fault energy, but like, a new iteration of it, like going into middle age. Because I did kind of feel like this is great, but it's not as chaotic as it was 10 years ago. And I'm like comparing it against how it used to be, which isn't fair, but it's only natural. And you run into that a lot with like punk artists.
What do you
like,
think it's lacking?
Oh, it's not lacking anything. I like it when like, I feel like the Lawrence Arms are good at this. I like it when a punk band like hits middle age and then they like start doing something new live, like just like a new... Not like they change their music, just like the show is different. Like they're not trying to be how it used to be. They find a way to progress.
What would you like to see, like music wise? Are you liking the direction he's gone in musically?
No music, no complaints. 10 out of 10. The last album was as good as anything he's done since he became a solo artist. And this just might be a me thing. It's just whenever I see someone like in their 40s, just like trying to like have the same energy in their 20, I'm like, well, you could just do something new and not even worry about like being like you were when you were young. Maybe I'm projecting like insecurities I have onto my man Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's reasonable though. You want something new. It's like it doesn't hurt to like throw a little feedback out there. Maybe Jeff hears it. You know, I'd like to hear him do more podcasts about Batman.
But that said, I had a great time. Got some dope food before. I got an arepa. And yeah, it was fun to like, that was my first punk show since COVID, like being right on, like, you know, all the moshing, all the craziness, and that was really fun.
Well, good. I'm glad you had a good time. Is there a Jeff Rosenstock song you want to recommend to the listeners to check out if they haven't heard of him?
If you've never heard of him before, I would check out the band he used to be in, which it was also functionally Jeff Rosenstock, like he writes everything, called Bomb the Music Industry. Check out a song called Hurricane Waves.
Hurricane Waves. All right.
Got a Beach Boys vibe.
You heard it here, folks. Go check out Hurricane Waves by Jeff Rosenstock. Go listen to The Good Son. Wait, what?
By Bomb the Music Industry.
Bomb the Music Industry. Check out The Good Son by Nick Cave from the 1990 titular seminal album. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Ian's going to take out the rest of the episode because I can't talk.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Buffy, the HR dog. We got a lot of HR violations for not handling our talk about religion very well, but what are you going to do? Thank you to...
What are you going
to
do?
Blue, the intern dog. Please write us a review, give us 5 stars, and we will see you next time.
Peace. Watch where you're walking. Don't trip on a puddle. Going on down Jubilee Street.